Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Spider-Man, No Way Home, Nightmare Alley, The Tender Bar, Swan Song, and Mother Android. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the Solar Opposites Holiday Special. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big news, for me at least, is we had the Critics' Choice Awards, which I am a part of. We had our nominations come out this week. We also had the Golden Globes nominations, but let's not talk about that right now. Let's talk about the more important ones, which is Critics' Choice, I was involved in. And it was a big nomination week for Belfast, which had 11 nominations, Dune, which had 10 nominations, Nightmare Alley and Licorice Pizza also had 9 nominations each. Power of the Dog had 10, and West Side Story had 11. So there are a couple of the movies that really floated to the top there. I love the fact that there was some love for Belfast. That's one of my favorite movies, and I was a little bit nervous because there was a bit of a backlash to that when it first came out, because I there's a group of people that don't particularly like Belfast, and that was the Best Picture category, but also Coda, which came out earlier this year, and that's important for a movie that comes out like before August to even be remembered in time for award season shows a real strength of the movie. And I don't think there was really even that big of a push by Apple to campaign for that movie for nominations. It just floated up to the top there. There's some that I don't particularly agree with. I'm not a huge fan of King Richard. I'm not a huge fan of Licorice Pizza. I have to admit, I've not seen Tick, Tick, Boom yet. So I've got to watch that one. That's also in the Best Picture category. But there are some interesting ones. You got Nicolas Cage got nominated for Best Actor for Pig. You had Peter Dinklage get nominated for Cyrano. And those are the ones that kind of surprised people. A lot of the other stuff you kind of expected to show up. But I love the fact that this is kind of spread around. And I will say, even though there's some movies that are showing up in the awards lists that I'm not a big fan of, like I said, not a big fan of Licorice Pizza, not a big fan of Come On, Come On. And those both got a handful of nominations here. Even like West Side Story, we'll talk about this one in a second when it comes to the box office. But while I enjoyed West Side Story and I thought it was a good movie, I'm kind of, I don't know if it needed to be nominated for everything that it was, but hey, that's cool. I mean, Dune was the one I thought was going to really kind of sweep, and it's got a lot of nominations, but there's a lot of competition out there. So I have my own personal loyalties on stuff. Some of the stuff wasn't a big surprise, like, you know, Hair and Makeup for Cruella. That appears to come out of nowhere, but that was really noticeable back earlier this year when it came out. Or, you know, people like Jessica Chastain getting nominated for Best Actress for The Eyes of Tammy Faye, or Kristen Stewart for Spencer. But I gotta say, I'm very happy with this list. If you go to criticschoice.com, you can get the full list. And then, of course, you're going to want to watch the ceremony when it airs live on CW and TBS Sunday, January 9th. The other piece of news was the box office this weekend, which was kind of surprising. I think a lot of people were expecting West Side Story to do a lot better than it did. And West Side Story came in really soft. It came in with less than $11 million over the weekend. To put that in perspective, it didn't even make $1 million more than Encanto did in its third week. West Side Story did not click with an audience, and there's been a lot of people running around trying to figure out why, because it's got such great buzz, it's got a great director behind it, and it's a well-known story, and the original movie from 1961, it like won the Oscar. And I think there are some people that are, they're getting mad at the older generation, because they're like, how dare you not go see the movie that was geared towards you? And we got to remember, we're still in a pandemic. There is this Omicron variant that's coming out there, and it's showing up around places, and it's very contagious. And even though it supposedly gives a milder infection, there's still a lot of people that want to avoid it. And I don't think you can necessarily get mad at people for wanting to protect their own health and in the public interest. But I think it's even more than that. I mean, sure, I think there is an older generation that's not going to the theaters because of the coronavirus, but I think it's greater than that. I think over the last 2 years, we as a society have been conditioned to watch a lot of stuff online. And then they shrunk these windows so much. I mean, I remember there was a time where you had to wait a year for a movie from theaters to come to VHS. And then they shortened it to like 6 months. And I remember it was like a 3 month window. And now, I mean, what is it? 45 days for some, 17 days for others. Maybe not to the physical media category, but at the very least for an option to watch it at home and a pay-per-view event or a VOD type option. So what that plays into is in the immediacy of it. Now, if you look at something like Spider-Man that's coming out this weekend, that one has an immediacy to it because a lot of people don't want things spoiled. They don't want the Easter eggs spoiled. There's a get this movie seen as soon as you can. And you had that also with Avengers Endgame, and you had that with Star Wars The Force Awakens. West Side Story had zero need for immediacy because not only did you already know the story because it was a remake of a movie that's a 500-year-old story in itself, there's no surprises to it. It's not like they changed the ending. So waiting an extra month to see West Side Story in the comfort of your own home kind of makes sense for a lot of people. I mean, no, coronavirus or not, you don't need to see it right now. You can wait till January. It's still going to be the same movie and you're going to get the same impact. And that's why it made so little money. And that's okay. This is the evolution of the marketplace. And that is an okay thing to happen. And we're not going to preserve everything the way it was, especially when home technology and delivery of home technology has changed even just over the last 2 years, let alone over the last 10. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to talk about is Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which opens in theaters on April 8th. Ha!
Since I've been gone, I've discovered the source of ultimate power.
That sounds big. It's been on my vision board for years.
Hope I'm not too late.
I'm sorry, who are you?
Name's Tails.
Okay, this is what we're gonna do. Step one, light taunting. Step two, I have no idea. Today's forecast calls for a 100% chance of adventure.
If you recall, the first Sonic the Hedgehog was one of those last releases pre-pandemic. And it was a bona fide hit for Paramount. But this one looks fun. The first one was fun. It was silly. It was stupid. I mean, it's based on a video game. I think, although I'm not a big fan of the video game, it authentically brought it to life. And it actually was able to tell a fun, compelling, cute little story without falling into all the traps that most video game movies do in terms of servicing the concept but not servicing a story. The next one I want to talk about is Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore, which is in theaters on April 15th.
This is the team that's going to take down the most dangerous wizard in over a century. A magizoologist, his indispensable assistant. A wizard descended from a very old family, a school teacher. And a muggle.
Dumbledore asked that I give you something, Jacob.
Are you kidding me right now?
Who wouldn't like our chances?
I've not been a huge fan of the Fantastic Beasts movie. I like the idea more than I've liked the first two movies. I like the idea of saying, let's expand the Harry Potter universe way beyond Harry Potter. There's so much more in the wizarding world, and I like the fact that it takes place so many years before Harry Potter that you're not actually dealing with Harry Potter. I didn't particularly love the story from the first two movies, but this one looks like it might be kind of interesting. This one looks like it's caught my attention. They finally fleshed out these characters. I think these first two episodes, and I call them episodes because that's what they felt like, these setup episodes of a longer series that you'd catch on Amazon or Netflix, where they spend 3 or 4 episodes just setting up the backstory and everything. And it feels that they can actually kick off a real story in this one. So I don't know. This one looks kind of cool. I'm looking forward to this one. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Nightmare Alley and Swan Song.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas just like the one.
to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews for this week. And of course, here we are, where we're a week before Christmas. A lot of stuff is coming out in the theaters. In fact, almost too many movies to even cover in a lot of ways. But let's talk about some of the big ones. The first big one is Nightmare Alley. Guillermo del Toro remakes his film noir classic about a carnival worker who scams his way into becoming a popular mentalist.
Step right up and behold one of the unexplained mysteries of the universe. Is he man or beast?
We're gotten by the same lust and threat that got us all walking on this earth, but gone wrong somehow in maternal womb. Is it a beast or is it a man? You're in luck, because tonight you will see him feed.
I made a point to watch the original before I saw this remake. And that's an interesting exercise. It's always an interesting exercise to see how modern remakes are affected, especially for a movie this old. So what I first found interesting is they made this movie contemporary to the original one. So this one's a period piece, where the original movie was a contemporary. I think the book was written in the 30s, so it kind of took place a couple years beforehand. But for the most part, it was a modern story back in the 1940s. And first of all, before we even talk about the story, just the look of the movie is fantastic. One of the things I've always railed against recently is that washed out, dimly lit, no contrast look of movies and television now. And they do that partly, I think, because of the digital cameras and the way you have to light for them. But I think they also make it, oh, that makes it look more realistic. And it makes it look, you know, if it's supposed to be a dark movie. I mean, this movie is dark. This movie has some really dark stuff. But there's contrast and there's color and there's a richness to it. The cinematography in this movie and the production design is brilliant. And you can always count on Guillermo del Toro to have a beautiful looking movie. And he does with this one. Now, I know a lot of people have said Bradley Cooper does not reach the level of Tyrone Powers in the first film. I don't know. I mean, I think they're, you know, you're talking about performances 65 years apart, and they're very different. And I think they mean different things from looking at it from a lens from 1947 and a lens from today, looking back in time 70 years. I really enjoyed the way this movie was put together and the pacing. Now, it essentially follows the same story. There's no surprises. If you've seen the original, you're going to know what happens in this movie. But they enrich the story a little bit. They do some things that you really couldn't do back in 1947. There's a bit at the ending, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it feels like there was an ending that they put in there in the original one to service the Hays Code. The Hays Code doesn't exist, so you can make something a darker ending or a more depressing ending. And you have that impending dread throughout, even when things get better, because it starts off in this carnival. We also get a little more backstory in the character. I mean, the Tyrone Powers character, you just kind of dropped in the carnival and there he is. But you follow Bradley Cooper's character from where he was before he joined the carnival and why he's sort of trying to stay under wraps. They change the location. A lot of it takes place in Buffalo versus Chicago, which I think is an interesting choice because those cities are very different. They're both Great Lake cities, but they're very, very different in terms of their high life, their society life, I guess you can say. And it also has a great cast. In particular, you've got Cate Blanchett is fantastic as one of the femme fatales. Toni Collette as the mentalist assistant who helps him out and gives him this basically this code on how to do this mentalist act. The relationship that Bradley Cooper's character in this one has with David Strathairn is better. I think this movie enriches not necessarily Bradley Cooper's character, not the main character, because Tyrone Powers gets a lot of richness to his character in the original movie, but it enriches the supporting cast. You get a greater give and take. It's everything does not exist just to service this main character. You feel like he's actually in there interacting with real people. And if anyone's a pawn, he is a pawn of the story. And it takes the dark concepts of the original movie and it twists them even more. So you get something that's a little more graphic. You know, they deal with geeks in this one. I mean, the traditional sense of the geek, a geek is a carny who will bite the heads off of animals and eat them live in front of an audience. And you don't see very many geeks nowadays, but back in the 30s and 40s, there were local carnivals that came through with geeks. And that was not considered taboo, just out there in the middle of flyover country. Now you don't see geeks. Kids don't grow up seeing geeks. So you delve more into the darkness of that segment of society, something that doesn't exist really anymore, at least in that form. So I'm going to have to say Nightmare Alley totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Swan Song. Knowing he has a terminal disease, a man must decide whether he should have a duplicate to replace him in order to save his family from grief.
I can't lie to my family anymore.
The second you tell your wife that you are dying, your opportunity to do this is gone. You have an opportunity here.
I'm not done. I didn't say he could.
You're dying.
This is on Apple TV Plus. So if you got Apple TV Plus, the service, you can watch it whenever you want to. It's also a limited release in theaters. It stars Mahershala Ali. He has some terminal disease. They don't go into the details of exactly what it is, but they're able to basically clone him and then map his brain onto this clone. And instead of it having just a switch off, he has to hand it off. And he's taken to this resort, basically, where they allow them to do that. And they've got some other people in there, like Awkwafina plays a character who's doing the same thing. And, of course, he goes to this resort, and there's the original. What's interesting about this is it's one of those science fiction concepts, because it's obviously stuff you can't do now. But that's just a leaping off to look at the human condition beyond it. And Mahershala Ali gives a very good performance in this. Naomi Harris plays his wife. She's sort of, I don't know, they don't develop her character very well. And I know it's all from his point of view, but she does seem to exist just for his edification and pleasure. But the movie itself feels like a Black Mirror episode, but not as dark. You know, Black Mirror tends to just look at the darkest side of humanity. And it has these elements that we've seen, like literally seen in Black Mirror. Like there was even a Black Mirror episode where they did create a duplicate, only it was after the person died. Also kind of reminds me a little bit of this episode of the TV series Solos on Amazon, where Anthony Mackie was basically doing the same thing. He was getting a duplicate to replace him, and he was meeting his duplicate. The problem with the movie is it really starts wringing its hands at a certain time. It overdoes it, and at times just gets exhausting getting to the point, and it drags. Those are the parts of the movie that I can't forgive. And even there's stuff that goes on that doesn't make internal logical sense. Like, for example, Glenn Close plays the woman who runs this service, and she's like, "This is very normal," and then she admits later they've only done this like 3 times. I'm like, well, what's normal? Nothing's normal if you've only done it 3 times. That's at least seems to be typical, but it's not a very large sample size. So it's hearts in the right place, but I really was not a fan of this. Like I said, the performances are fine, but oh man, it's kind of a slag to watch. So I'm going to have to say Swan Song kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Spider-Man No Way Home and Mother Android. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the big movie that everybody's talking about this week, and that is Spider-Man No Way Home. After his secret identity is revealed, Peter Parker asks his friend Doctor Strange to make people forget, but the spell goes awry and opens a rift into the multiverse.
When Mysterio revealed my identity, my entire life got screwed up. I was wondering if maybe you could make it so that he never did.
Strange.
Don't cast that spell. It's too dangerous.
We tampered with the stability of space-time. The multiverse is a concept about which we know frighteningly little. Be careful what you wish for, Parker.
What What's funny about this one is I've heard a lot of people say, oh, it's going to be super huge and it's all because of Spider-Man. And look, I know that people love Spider-Man, but the reason this movie is causing such a stir is 100% because of the influence of Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I know that Sony has been desperately wanting to re-untangle Spider-Man for their own purposes. But this movie would not be this movie without all of this multiverse attachment within the purview of Doctor Strange being involved, and without the fact that all of these upcoming Marvel movies are all going to be dealing with the multiverse. You've got the Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness coming up. You had WandaVision and Loki on Disney Plus, and that all seeded this idea of a multiverse. Heck, even Avengers Endgame seeded the idea of a multiverse. So, yes, there is a popularity to these Spider-Man movies that have been going on for 20 years. I mean, the first Spider-Man, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, was 2002, broke all these box office records and ushered in superhero movies into a new age. But don't think that this is just the Spider-Man stuff people are interested in. They're interested in all the crossover. People love crossovers. And it's amazing that it took Hollywood this long to figure out. And even now, we saw that happen with the Avengers, where you had these four or five movies leading up to the Avengers, and then suddenly Avengers comes out and it's huge because you crossed over all these characters. Comic books has been doing this kind of crap for almost 100 years. And Hollywood hasn't figured out how to be consistent with it outside of Marvel Studios, and a lot of that has to do with Kevin Feige's involvement. So when it comes to this movie, it's a good movie. And ultimately, as a Spider-Man movie, it's an interesting, fun, cool adventure. Like I said, I've been reading comic books since I was a kid. This kind of multiverse crossover type of story is nothing new to me. For your average viewer, this is maybe a little bit much to take. They had to have been eased into it. And that's why you had stuff like WandaVision and Loki and even What if you watch that one. Or if you watch the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the animated movie that came out a couple years ago, that absolutely falls into the purview of multiverse. So they've played around with this with Spider-Man already. Now, there's two ways of looking at this movie. The one way is to look at it as just an adventure superhero story, and it works. It does. And it does allow for a certain amount of character development, because here's Peter Parker, his identity is blown and he's trying to get people to forget, but he doesn't want, like, the people he loves to forget. So he's got that conflict of not being able to do one thing without doing the other. And I think that they do have some very good character moments, and they do have some good story moments beyond just the, oh, neat, look here, there's Doc Ock from Spider-Man 2 that Sam Raimi directed. So although it's a little thin, because it's trying to do two things. On one hand, it's trying to give that story, which I think it works. Whereas like something like Homecoming, I think that first Tom Holland Spider-Man movie, that one was all about his character trying to reconcile being Spider-Man. This one is him trying to untangle the web, so to speak. But the other half of the movie is a lot of Easter eggs and cool stuff from previous movies, and I'm dancing around the spoiler issues and stuff like that. But if you know what the movie's sort of catch is, nothing in this is a surprise. It's cool to watch, but nothing's a surprise. But it is a cavalcade of Easter eggs and cool things that you see, and you're like, oh, that's neat. Oh, that's a reference to this. And if you're a fan, it absolutely services the fan. But I think that the casual fan can enjoy it as well, not just the diehard Spider-Man fan. But it is kind of these two movies. So, I mean, the story is good, but it is a little thin because they spend a good chunk of the movie tying things together. In that sense, it moves. And whereas something like, the James Bond movie, No Time to Die, was two different movies. It was this James Bond movie, and then it was sort of this movie was trying to end the franchise. And at times, those two got in each other's way, and they made the movie overly long. This one flows a lot better. It certainly feels like it's a coherent film, and that's a good thing. But then again, you know, comic books lend themselves to these kind of stories. So, without spoiling anything, I mean, it's a fun movie. I enjoyed watching it. I'm going to watch it again. In terms of a multiverse movie, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is a much better one. But this one still is a lot of fun, and it has a lot of inside jokes. And it's everything you're going to want from a movie like this. So, yeah, it's okay. I mean, can you complain about things? Can you nitpick stuff? Can you throw your arms up and be like, hey, this is all just about fan service? Yes, you can do that if you want to be a jerk about it. But overall, it's a fun movie. So I'm going to have to say Spider-Man No Way Home rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Mother Android. After benevolent android servants break their programming to attack humanity, a pregnant woman and her baby's father try to find safety in a new city.
In a perfect world, none of this ever would have happened. Androids were a part of our everyday life.
Hot chocolate syrup.
And then one night, everything changed. We've got to get to Boston before I give birth. It's the only safe place.
How long would that take?
2 weeks. If you can find a safe way for us to go, I'll go.
This is on Hulu right now, and it feels a little more like a direct to streaming movie. The movies that are showing up exclusively on some of these services, they are looking a little more cinematic. They're looking like movies that would have gone to theaters, but it just because of a pandemic or whatever, they moved it to the streaming services. This movie, however, feels a little bit more like a TV movie. As opposed to that Vacation Friends movie with John Cena and Lil Rel from last summer, that one felt like it would have been a broad comedy you would have seen in the theaters, but Disney decided to put it on Hulu. Part of the problem with this one is, and this is what you get into whenever you deal with post-apocalyptic movies, and the apocalypse being that these androids attacked all their owners and started killing people. They tend to be about a bunch of dirty humans in the woods trying to find their way around. And that type of story just gets boring to me after a while. It's been done to death. You've seen it so many times. Of, oh, we're in the resistance and we're going to go to this safe area and there's these people who are going to fight against the androids. But you never really get any sort of mixing it up. It's always just like these run and gun attacks. I don't know, just this feels like a Road Warrior movie, only instead of crazy people on the roads in the outback, it's these killer androids in the woods. Chloe Grace Moretz plays the mother, and her baby daddy is played by Algie Smith. And he's awful in it. He comes across exactly as what he is, a rapper trying to act. He doesn't act outside of his own personality. And like everything, he's just like, oh, no, honey. It doesn't feel like he actually created a character. They just said, we're going to cast you as yourself. There's no acting from him at all. He's terrible in this movie. And he drags it down. You don't get any sort of sense of humanity from him. You just get the sense that he's got Instagram followers. And they figure if they put him in this movie, that people are going to watch it. So the concept's interesting, but they never get to the sci-fi part of it. And even then, some of the stuff just doesn't quite make sense. And you have to question the why. And I mean, here you are talking about consciousness and self-awareness and AI. And there's so much stuff you could talk about, but really they squander it all and they just make them into these evil robots. Any sort of really sort of speculative fiction is squandered in this movie. And then it just, again, sort of like how Swan Song dragged, this thing drags. And you get to the end and you're just like, oh my God, please end. Will the androids just come and kill everybody, please? So I'm going to have to say, Mother Android sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Tender Bar and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the Solar Opposites Holiday Special.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really...
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews and talk about the Tender Bar. George Clooney directs this adaptation of a writer's memoirs that chronicle his time with his extended family as he grows up to attend Yale.
Your only uncle, so I'm also your favorite uncle, right?
Sounds like some maybe.
I have no idea how, but you are going to law school.
So you can sue your father for child support.
No, here we go.
And I'm going to always tell you the truth. Your father is deadbeat.
I'll take care of you. Teach you the male sciences.
I saw you in the yard playing sports. You're not very good. Now find some other activities.
I like to read.
You read enough
of those.
you could become a writer.
This is in theaters in limited release right now. It is coming to Amazon Prime, I believe, on January 7th. So if you don't have time to watch it now, you can't get to the theater, or you can't find it near you, you can got a couple weeks, you can watch it online. Now, this is directed by George Clooney, and it's a bit of a diversion from George Clooney's work. If you've seen enough of his directed pieces, his stuff tends to be grander. He does bigger stories. And I wouldn't say George Clooney's a great director. He's done movies that I've thought were interesting, and this is kind of a hit or miss for me, but he tends to do stuff that's either about a bigger story, like he did that movie Suburbicon a couple years ago, which I know a lot of people didn't like it. It was a little bit heavy-handed story about racism. But then he did The Monuments Men, which is about stolen Nazi art. He did Good Night and Good Luck. So he usually deals with something relatively political and something large. This is a little bit more intimate. It's kind of a diversion from George Clooney, which is kind of cool because it forces him to scale things back. And it's also not the whimsical, silly movie. Now, there's plenty of funny moments in this. There's plenty of, I would call, day-to-day funny, like a family that loves each other and they wisecrack, and there's jokes here and there thrown around, but it doesn't have a little bit more of the broad comedy that you're used to with Clooney's work, which, like I said, I think that's great. I love the fact that he's taking a chance to stretch. He's trying something different with this movie. And ultimately, this is a memoir. This is the story of a writer. And I'm just going to go out there and say it. I'm not going to mince words at the beginning. I am so tired of stories about writers. To me, that is one of the oldest. Oh, great. Oh, a writer, a tortured writer with a family issues. Wonderful. I've never heard that before. And that's exactly what this movie is. And sort of the part of the thing is, in the movie, the character, as he grows up, they're like, books are trending towards memoirs. And I'm like, are they really? Since when were novels no longer a thing that people liked? So it's the memoirs. The thing is, your memoir can only be interesting if it's actually interesting. And there's some interesting elements to this, but there are some parts in this movie, because of it being this guy's memoir and it's real, there is parts of this that just, it's frustrating to watch, because you're like, come on, you're being an idiot. Or it falls into these roaringly huge cliches, and cliches exist for a reason, because if you're doing a memoir of somebody and you're looking at their life, most writers go through the same struggles. Most writers get rejected. Writers end up having to slum it doing smaller work, or they go to school and they're struggling to find a balance between what, they consider their muse and their art and what can actually make money and maybe do a newspaper reporting. But newspaper reporting is not writing a novel. It's not even writing a memoir. So they're very different styles of writing. And part of this frustrating is I'm a writer, and I've worked as a professional writer in newspapers and textbooks and short stories. And so I know the struggles that writers go through. And I'm just like, yeah, I can identify with certain things, but other parts of it, I'm just like, oh my God, you're just whining at this point. I don't know how many times you've go join a writer's group sometime. You want to hear writers whine? Join a writing group. And you'll hear everybody whine about this and that and the other. The things that I find most interesting about this is the little weird little family dynamic he has, because the story is Lily Rabe plays the kid's mom, and the kid grows up. Ty Sheridan plays him as a kid who's like 18, 20, when he's going to college. But the grandfather, played by Christopher Lloyd, he's sort of like the guy who always let his kids and cousins and nephews and nieces live with him when they were down on their luck. So there was this rotating door of people who lived with this guy. And so you had these very colorful characters. And that's what I find most interesting. Ben Affleck plays his uncle, who really kind of takes him under his wing and becomes the father that his father, who's a bit of a deadbeat, can't be. And that's the stuff that I like about the movie. The development of the kid, less important. And especially when the kid goes to college and he gets a girlfriend and he's pining over this girl. And I know this is all true. I get it. But, oh God, it's boring and annoying. But the quirky weirdness of the family is neat. So there's this mixed bag of stuff I like and stuff I get kind of tired of pretty quickly in this movie. But overall, it's a good movie, and especially if you're want to see something that George Clooney's doing that's different from what he's been doing in the past, it's definitely worth checking out. So I'm going to say Tender Bar kind of rocks, but with some reservations in terms of introspective writer's work. So heavens. Oh, but yeah, it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I'm going to pick a holiday special this week because, you know, we're a week until Christmas. I had this listed a couple weeks ago and I just wanted to talk about it. There's been so many things coming and going in terms of movies and TV and videos and options. I'm swamped. So I want to talk about the Solar Opposites holiday special. The aliens in suburbia have to delve into classic holiday movies to bring the Christmas spirit back to town.
I love Christmas.
And I love that we got to kill a tree and that we're keeping its body in the house.
Your spirit is at 0%.
Apparently, the Earth holiday spirit is gone.
Maybe it's not so bad. Look, there's Santa.
Let's do super Christmassy stuff to get our spirits back. I do love giving a list of demands to a well-dressed stranger. We have to go into holiday movie. Prepare for holiday magic. Whoever greenlit this must have been on so much cocaine.
Now, before I even talk about this, there's a bunch of other holiday specials that are out there. You can go on Apple TV Plus and watch the classic Peanuts one, and I think on HBO Max and Hulu, they have some of the classics like The Grinch. And if you can't find them on a free service, you can usually find them to rent pretty easily. But there are a bunch of new stuff out there. And every streaming service, if you go to it, they have a holiday section. I know in Hulu, there's a holiday section. And in Netflix, there's a holiday section. Now, your mileage is going to vary. I mean, you go to the Netflix holiday section, you're going to get the 58 different Christmas movies about a high-powered urban professional woman who goes to a small town and meets a guy with a dog and then falls in love. You're going to get 50 of those. But then there's a bunch of other stuff there that's interesting. And so you go to your favorite streaming service, find the holiday thing. Like, I think on Apple TV Plus, they've got a Ted Lasso, like stop motion claymation animated Ted Lasso special. I got to check that out this week. I just found out about that. So that's something I got to check out. But on Hulu, they have the Solar Opposites holiday special. And if you're a fan of the series, it's great because it doubles down on the internal references that they have. You know, this is done by the people who do Rick and Morty rather than the Seth MacFarlane side. So it has that Rick and Morty flair to it, which is very edgy and very dark and self-referential and culturally aware. So like the whole thing is they have this device and they have to go in and somehow they have to go in and relive the holiday classic Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jake Lloyd and Sinbad. And somehow that has corrupted the story, and they have to fight in this apocalyptic world to try and make that get its holiday spirit back. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of the Solar Opposite characters. I'm a huge fan of the series. I think it's a lot of fun. If you like that, it's a great little holiday special to watch. It's not for kids. It is not for kids. Do not show your kids unless you're going to have some awkward discussions afterwards. But yeah, this is a fun little holiday special. It's worth checking out on Hulu and enjoying as possibly a tradition. They've actually had a couple. You know, 8-Bit Christmas was one that was on HBO Max. That was a nice little holiday special. This one's kind of cool. I'm looking forward to that Ted Lasso special. I got to watch that this week. But yes, the Solar Opposites holiday special totally rocks. Check it out.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Also available on disc new, we have Venom, Let There Be Carnage, which is absolutely worth watching in comparison to Spider-Man, No Way Home this week. You also have The Last Duel and The Card Counter, two lesser seen movies that are vying for some award consideration. And then in terms of the vintage stuff, you've got The Wolf of Wall Street in a 4K release and a new release of My Stepmother's an Alien. But even better for Christmas, you have a double re-release of Jack Frost, not the Michael Keaton one, and Jack Frost 2, Revenge of the Mutant Killer Snowman, which will tell you what the first one is about as well. But those are now available in high definition. So I don't know if they're worth it in high definition because they're kind of crappy production value anyways. But you've got a new double release of those. And that'll get you all set for Christmas. And that's it. Next week, we're going to be talking about The Matrix Resurrections, The King's Man, and Sing 2. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.